All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, speaking to you from New York City on this, the 7th day of September, 2021. Before I talk more about today's show, I do like to remind you that I am the author of a newsletter called Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks. You can sign up for that letter by going to miningstocks.com, miningstocks.com. Call our number in New York during regular work hours, 718-457-1426. 718-457-1426. We do also like to suggest that you consider signing up for Chen Lin's letter, What is Chen Buying, What is Chen Selling? ChenPicks.com is the website to go to sign up for Chen's letter. And we want to thank you all for listening and making it one of the more listened to shows on the Voice America Business Channel. Also, want to encourage you to send along whatever comments, questions, or whatever comments you might have to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. Questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. I also want to thank our sponsors for making this show economically viable. This week's sponsors are Noble Resources, El Oro Resources, Hannon Metals, Labrador Gold Corp, Lion One Metals, SK Mining Corp, NV Gold Corp, and Firefox Gold. I've titled today's show, Making Sense of a Financial World Run Amok. Frank Holmes and Chen Lin return. Walter J. Buckley visits for the first time. If anyone can help us make sense of the world that seems to rely more on miracles of technology and concepts of equality rather than merit, it's Frank Holmes. From his years of experience managing precious metals and natural resource mutual funds to starting an airline ETF and now to serving as executive chairman of Hive Blockchains Technologies, Frank Holmes can bridge the gap of understanding between a traditional investment mentality and the mysteries of cryptocurrencies. We will look to Frank for some portfolio guidance in this rapidly changing world, as well as Chen Lin, who will join me after our first commercial break. Chen specializes in biotech stocks as well as energy and precious metals miners, and his connections in China always provide some good insights from people he knows and speaks to in China. So I look forward to talking with Chen Lin right after our first commercial break. Before we go to our first commercial break, I want to introduce to you a longtime friend of mine named Walter J. Buckley. I prefer using the name Jay because that is the name that he uses most of the time in his daily activities, and it is the name I use whenever I speak with him. I learned to know Jay when we worked together in the 1980s at Westpac Banking Corporation in New York. We have remained friends since then. All told, Jay has had a 40-year career in banking. Since we worked together at Westpac, Jay has gone on to work as a vice president at Midland Montague, and then he spent the last 27 years as a managing director at Crédit Agricole CIB. Now in retirement, Jay enjoys spending time with his family, sailing, golfing, and serving as a board member of the Guide Dog Foundation and America's Vet Dogs. I have personally donated to the Guide Dog Foundation because I believe this 503c organization does some very good things for humanity, and that's why I've invited my friend Jay onto the show today to tell you a little bit about the Guide Dog Foundation. Welcome, Jay, and thanks so much for joining me.
Well, thank you, Jay. I really appreciate that very much. And again, thank you so much for making that kind donation that you provided a couple of weeks ago.
Well, you know, it's said that dogs are man's best friend or something like that. I think the saying goes, and it certainly, they are adorable animals. And I know we met up with, you have one, a vet dog, I think, a retired dog, I think, a German Shepherd, very, very beautiful animal. And they are just lovable animals. I think God gave them to us because he loves us and he wants us to enjoy life, and they really are a blessing, aren't they?
Yeah, I agree. And yes, my dog Rocky, Sergeant Rocky, is a retired veteran service dog who we adopted 5 years ago, almost exactly 5 years ago, and he's been a real blessing to us. And that's actually how I became interested in and how I got to know the America's Vet Dogs Foundation.
Yeah, and I'm happy to say that Teresa and I met up with Rocky, too, a few weeks ago or so, earlier this summer anyway. Well, anyway, tell us a little bit about the history of the Guide Dog Foundation and how they are such a blessing to people who have special needs, especially. I mean, I don't know that you have any special needs, Jay, but they're just lovely to have around you. But especially people that have special needs, these dogs can be trained to really provide some help to them. But tell us a little bit about them.
About the history.
Yeah.
Well, Jay, the America's Vet Dogs began in 2003 as a project of the Guide Dog Foundation for the Blind to consolidate and increase our outreach to veterans of all eras. In 2006, it became a separate 501c3 not-for-profit organization that serves the needs of disabled veterans, active duty service members, and responders with disabilities, allowing them to once again live with pride and self-reliance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, I remember seeing the Guide Dogs, Jay. I worked years ago, many, many years ago, I lived and worked in Morristown, New Jersey, and I saw them training for the blind people being trained to use the Guide Dogs. I guess they're still used for that purpose, right? And what are some of the other things that these Guide Dogs are used for? And who, what kind of people do they really help?
Yeah. Now, our service dog programs were created to provide enhanced mobility and renewed independence to U.S. veterans, active duty members, and first responders with disabilities. And we provide guide dogs for individuals who are blind or have low vision, Jay.
Uh-huh.
Hearing dogs for those who have lost their hearing later in life.
Mm-hmm.
Service dogs for those with other physical disabilities. Facility dogs as part of the rehabilitation process in military and VA hospitals. And specialized service dogs to help those who have PTSD in an effort to provide emotional and physical support needed.
Mm-hmm.
For a veteran with a serious limb injury, an amputation, or traumatic brain injury, a service dog can provide stability and support climbing up and down stairs or getting in and out of a chair, and can be trained to fetch and retrieve specific items, for example, a medication, a wallet, or a phone. For veterans with seizure disorder, our dogs can be trained to be alert for seizure response. And that, in fact, is what Rocky was. He was one of those specialized service dogs. And when we drop things, to this day, he'll go over and pick it up for us, which is really great.
Yeah, I think we saw a demonstration of that perhaps when we were visiting with you. Where are these dogs trained, Jay?
Yeah, we have a 10-acre campus out in Smithtown, Long Island, Jay, which houses our administration office, our training center with kennel space for up to 174 dogs, breeding and development center for our puppies, and our student residence center out there.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us some idea of how many people have been helped over the years by guide dogs? Do you have any number?
Yeah, we have placed over 1,000 assistance dogs with disabled veterans, including guide and service dogs, combat stress control dogs, and specialized therapy dogs. So it's quite an undertaking. It takes a long time to train these dogs, Jay, and I've actually had a chance on many occasions now to go out to the campus and watch these dogs being trained. And furthermore, the veterans that we do give these dogs to, I've actually seen them. They live on campus for a couple of weeks with the trainers, and they get to know their dogs, and they learn how to work with their dogs for the specialized needs that they have. So it's quite a thing to say, and it's, as you said, I think you phrased it very nicely, it truly is a blessing to watch how these dogs and these veterans get to know each other and how they bond. It is really something that it actually brings tears to your eyes when you see what it does for them.
Sure. And I think I saw something about George Herbert Walker Bush, maybe in his older age. You guys provided a dog for him. Is that right?
Yeah. We are very proud of that fact that we trained and placed service dog Sully H.W. Bush with the late President Bush in 2018. And I had the chance to meet Sully at one of our recent fundraisers. He's quite an amazing dog. And now that late President Bush has passed away, he's serving our patients at the Walter Reed National Medical Facility now. So he continues to provide his services to those in need at the Walter Reed Medical Facility. And as many people would have seen, he was the dog that was, when you saw President Bush's funeral and you saw his casket there in wake, you saw the dog sitting by his side. That was Sully. That was the dog that we trained specifically for President Bush.
I think you have a personal story to relate as well, a Marine sergeant perhaps that you would care to share with our listeners?
Sure. And also, I just wanted to mention to you, Jay, that it cost over $50,000 to breed, raise, and train and place one of these assistant dogs, and that it's never a charge to the veteran or first responder.
Sure.
All of our funding comes from the generous contributions of individuals, corporations, foundations, businesses, and service and fraternal clubs. But to answer your question, I do have a personal story because it really caught me by surprise. As you know, I like to golf, and one of the places I like to golf is at a local golf course here at the VA Center. And it was about a year or so ago when I went up to the starter. The starter was a guy who was about 6'3". He looked a little bit like Arnold Schwarzenegger. And he, you know, like, and this guy looked like, try to imagine G.I. Joe at 6'3" on steroids. This guy would look like he was in great shape, and he looked like he could literally, you know, chew metal, for example. But he was there, and I saw a dog with him, and I saw that the dog was wearing a vest. So I went over to the dog, and I looked at it, and it said America's Vet Dogs on it. So I went over to this sergeant, and I said to him, hey, you know, I see that you have a service dog. He goes, yeah. He goes, I got it from the America's Vet Dogs. And he started to tell me a little bit about it. And I said, just so you know, I said, I'm on the board of directors there. And he just immediately just stopped, and he looked at me. And tears came to his eyes. He came over in front of my friends and gave me a hug and said to me, he goes, this dog changed my life. He goes, I have PTSD. He goes, and I tried to commit suicide. I was on the brink of committing suicide on several occasions. He goes, this dog has saved my life. He goes, I can't tell you how blessed I am to have him. He goes, and I thank you so much for your service. And I said, you're thanking me? I said, you were a Marine sergeant deployed to Afghanistan. Three tours of duty.
Oh my goodness.
And I said, I thank you for your service, sir.
Absolutely.
I do nothing in comparison to what you did. So that was my personal story. And just made me very proud to have to be affiliated with the organization, Jay.
Sure. And you know, our listeners, anybody that really they're touched by this story, by maybe a lot of people listening to this show know people who have been back from service and who have been harmed in one way or another. Certainly there is a way that we can help, and maybe you could explain that to our listeners.
Sure. And I appreciate that. Yeah, my ask today, Jay, for your listeners is to please donate anything you can to our wonderful organization for those who served us so honorably, and especially, as you can imagine, now that we're seeing how things have unfolded in Afghanistan and how these brave men and women that have been so highly trained and have given so much of their lives. So if you really can, it would be great if you could go to our website, and I'll spell that. It's www.vetdogs.org. That's www.vetdogs.org. And simply press the donate button on the top right part of the page, and there are several ways one can help us, and your support is so much appreciated.
Yeah,
as I said, all of this, we provide these free of charge to these veterans and also first responders, Jay, not just veterans.
Yes.
And so all of these donations go so much. It's just a wonderful organization.
And I'm sure there are an awful lot of people that could be helped if the financial means were there to do that, right? So.
Yep, that's exactly right.
A lot of people out there in need. All of these wars we've had for so many years. And at a time like this, I can definitely believe that it's a time more than ever that these veterans need this kind of help. Jay, thank you so much for being with us and telling us about this story. It is a very heartwarming story, and you know, normally we're looking at gold and making money and so forth, but the human side of life, I mean, we work hard because we want to help each other, and this is one way people can definitely do that. Thank you so much for being with us, Jay, and we'll look to keep up with you in the future on this very worthy cause that you have been engaged in. Thank you.
Thank you, Jay, and thank you to your listeners very much.
All right. Well, folks, don't go away, because coming right up after the break, I will be talking to Chen Lin, who will update us on his latest thinking about China, the equity markets, and perhaps a comment or two on the gold and gold share and biotech markets, as well as his latest comments on the job numbers that came out this past Friday. So don't go away. I'll be right back with Chen Lin.
Firefox Gold is actively exploring in Finland, where recent discoveries have sparked a new gold rush. Firefox controls a major portion of a prospective gold belt, giving the company a distinct advantage for exploration and strategic partnerships. The company's strong international leadership team, combined with its Finland-based exploration specialists, will put Firefox on the crest of the coming wave of gold discoveries. Firefox Gold trades on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol FFOX. Go to firefoxgold.com to subscribe for updates.
SK Mining Corp, trading under the symbol ESK on the TSX Venture and ESKYF on the OTCQB, is a mineral exploration company targeting precious metals, rich VMS deposits in the heart of British Columbia's Golden Triangle. SK Mining controls a prospective land package totaling 130,000 acres, which lies across a geologic trend that once hosted the prolific SK Creek Mine. With a world-renowned geological team, funding in place, and shareholders such as Eric Sprott, SK Mining is on the cusp of a world-class discovery. Go to skmining.com to subscribe for updates.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really happy to have with me once again Chen Lin. Chen is the author of What is Chen Buying? What is Chen Selling? And you can subscribe to his excellent newsletter, his money-making newsletter, I should say, at chenpicks.com. Welcome, Chen, and thanks for joining me again.
Thank you, Jay. Glad to be here.
Always good to have you with me, Chen, for your ideas, because they are unique, they are yours, and, you know, it's I think this is the original thinking process that provides so much value for your subscribers. Before we go get into this today, I would like to ask you just your comments on the employment numbers this morning. Quite shocking. I think quite lower than expected. 235,000, I think, non-farm payroll numbers. And I know Bloomberg was looking for 733,000, so that's just about a third of what they were looking for. What are your thoughts about today's numbers, and were you surprised?
Oh, I was a little bit surprised, but you know, there's a talk. I subscribe to other also newsletter. We exchange actually ideas with other newsletter, right? That people are very specialized on that. It seems to be that there's a lot of education job. 200,000 was not, you know, was pushed back due to or whatever.
COVID.
So there is not that bad, but it's bad. This is a pretty bad. But it shows, you know, the Delta variants actually probably threaten a lot of industry like the travel and leisure. There's very little job gains from that area versus huge job gain. Actually, they revised up last month. It's over 1 million, actually. Mm-hmm. So actually, that makes the next month's job data very interesting because we have the unemployment benefit cutoff, right? Cutoff in a few days, we won't have, you know, unemployment people won't get the extra benefit anymore.
Right.
So they have to start looking for jobs.
Uh-huh.
So that actually makes September job number very interesting to see if there's how many job gains, you know, if any. And second, it's probably will put the Fed on hold for September. There's so much talk that the Fed wants to start tapering, make an announcement at least in September. I think this is a done deal, right? Mm-hmm. So they won't do anything. They probably just, oh, we will see, you know, they will just use that excuse. They will see it maybe in November, right? What's the next Fed meeting? Mm-hmm. And then that makes we have a two job numbers, right? We have a September and October job number.
Right.
So they can potentially look back and decide whether they're going to taper. That actually push back the schedule probably to early next year. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, that's probably earliest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have no doubt that this this COVID variance is causing people not to travel as much. I was just over the lunch hour today was listening to them say that people are hitting the roads. They're driving more now and flying less. So I think people are just not really wanting to get on an airplane still to a great extent. Well, tapering is a big question in my mind, Chen. You know, I have this sort of notion that tapering is more talk than action. That we saw when they tried to taper during Bernanke's days, yet it didn't go so well. Interest rates go up just a little bit, and all of a sudden the equity markets start to tumble. But do you think, how seriously do you take tapering? And why would they want to do it? Because, doesn't everybody want to have the party continue?
Yeah, everybody wants to have a party, especially the Powell is for the re-election next year. Mm-hmm. So I think he will try to make this as smooth as possible. So he should try to delay it as long as he could. But right now, you see the overnight repo is unbelievable. There's so much cash in the bank. They've got no place to put. There's no use. Right now, the mortgage application start to drop as the mortgage rate, the mm-hmm. loans availability start to drop because their housing is so expensive. People just not buying so much. So the fact they keep on buying at such aggressive pace, it create another problem. What I feel is Powell, he probably would try to taper a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then get to his re-election, and then we'll see. I think they probably can do $10 billion, reduce by $10 billion,
uh-huh.
And then the slow pace, and then see if there are any problem, right? And then very on a very slow pace.
Yeah. So they'll buy $10 billion less of treasuries or mortgage-backed securities or whatever that is the Fed buys. And that's against what are they buying now, Chen? How much are they spending now?
If I remember correctly, $60 billion.
Uh-huh.
It's a very, very large amount number. They
right.
just push so much money into the banks. They're flooded with cash. They have mm-hmm. to do overnight repo, and mm-hmm. we know that it would create another problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for Powell, after watching him in the past years, he probably just trying to take it as intimidated step as possible, mm-hmm. as a little step, but don't take any risk and get reelected first.
So yeah, he wants another term at the Fed, and there are some people, especially AOC and those on the more far left of the Democrat Party, they would like somebody, I guess, a little more aggressive than Powell, but Powell is trying to do everything, it seems, politically to stay in power, so we'll see how that goes, but... taper. I mean, it's just crazy, too, with interest rates, Chen. Banks don't really have any incentive to lend. I mean, they can't get enough interest rate. They can't get enough interest to cover their losses, essentially, with, I mean, they can't charge anything, essentially. So it's
exactly. And then they're sitting on so much cash, they mm-hmm. have nowhere to put. And mm-hmm. that's the problem. It's mm-hmm. not that, they don't have enough money.
Well, it's certainly, certainly here, as we're recording this on Friday for our show on Tuesday, I should mention that, it certainly has given gold a boost today. Gold is up, $22 or so as we're speaking.
Exactly. Go back to the critical 1830 area.
Mm-hmm.
They plan to hit through 1850. I knew for a fact a lot of people were shorting gold ahead of the labor market number.
Uh-huh.
Top number, and now they got flat-footed. See if they have cover or not. I think that we have a very decent chance gold will penetrate through 1850. That's when the short will force to cover.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we can have another rally, but that mm-hmm. will be very, very nice. Starting September, we'll have mm-hmm. a rally.
Mm-hmm. So what do you see the, with inflation numbers rising dramatically, are you concerned about inflation, Chen, or do you think that's going to run its course here? I mean, a lot of people are certainly both sides of that argument. A lot of people are saying, well, the economy's not nearly as strong as they thought it was. We could have an equity market decline here. There could be a lot of factors that could, tamper the inflation rate or, make it temporary.
Right now the household balance sheet is probably the best thing because of all these stimulus, right?
Yeah.
The stimulus check is there's a lot of money in household. It's a transfer from government to people. There's talk, depending on Democrat, there depends on the election next year, right? Depending on if Democrat can keep the control. Mm-hmm. If do, they may transfer more wealth to mm-hmm. the general public. That can be very inflationary, mm-hmm. right? Because right now I heard people are showing me, people when they buy new cars in California, they were just 10,000 over sticker now because there are so little cars available
because
of the chip shortage.
Yeah.
And then all the people with all the money want to buy a new car. So
that could be an inflationary effect. Yeah, so we're combining shortages and chain supply chain disruptions all around the world that are causing prices, that are playing a role in it, rising prices, along with this enormous amount of money that's pumped into the system. But Chen, I know you pay a lot of attention to China. You know people in China. You talk to people there. What are your thoughts about China and how they fit into this whole equation? And I know with regard to gold, you always think China might have a role to play in that as well. But what are your thoughts about China now in general?
Yeah, China right now, they could be heading into slowdown, mm-hmm. and there could be significant slowdown. Part of it, Chinese government recently just started to really hammer those big business. They want the wealth transfer. They want the social equality, like AOC, but it's 10 times more. Okay, so they want wealth transfer from the big company to the little guy. So mm-hmm. they want the social justice, they want all the other. But with those kind of changes, a lot of times they create uncertainty for mm-hmm. the company, for the mm-hmm. business.
Sure.
So I think I have hard to imagine all these CEO in China got concerned. Okay, so I think the growth in China for next year is cloudy at most.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so and could head into significant slowdown. But again, if China head into slowdown, Chinese government, the first thing they do, they were just infrastructure spending. They just build all these railroad and maybe empty apartment, mm-hmm. maybe all the whatever. They just build the way out. That's the typical. But I don't know if they, the things I see, of course, I have to watch carefully for the next few months. China could head into some significant slowdown.
Hmm.
When we have rebalanced the COVID, a little bit more under control, the country like India and Vietnam, they can start manufacture,
mm-hmm.
China could be in little trouble next year.
Interesting. Well, I would think if China slows down significantly, that has to have an impact on a lot of commodity prices and other things as well, though, Chen, in the short term anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's what I have concern with energy, with oil, even copper, 50% copper consumption in China,
mm-hmm.
So despite all the green thing, all these electric cars, Goldman mm-hmm. said the demand were going up. But if China really slows down, the base metal could have some trouble.
Right. Chen, I can't let you go before I ask you about biotechs because you are the biotech king as far as I know. What are you seeing in biotechs now? I know you've mentioned it's been pretty bad a good part of this year so far. Recently, you felt that maybe the biotechs are turning around. What are your thoughts now about that sector?
Yeah, so biotech is one of the worst hit. Actually, people were saying, airline, cruise line were hit worse by the COVID. No, it's biotech was hit most by COVID. Why? Because in multiple fold, COVID prevented the trial because they have all these trials going on. Suddenly, the hospital, they have a COVID patient. And then suddenly all the people participating in the trial, they don't want to go to hospital anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So there are so many companies, the trial got delayed for a year. Very common. Mm-hmm. Trial COVID also stopped the new drug from reaching to consumer because the people don't go to a hospital anymore. They just remote talk to their doctor. Doctor just gave them the old drug, right? The new
mm-hmm.
drug, you have to marketing it. You have to tell the doctor. You have to show them. You have to those virtual marketing so far has been disaster for those new drugs. So all these things together combined with this patent talk, Biden administration, didn't help. Okay, so biotech is having one of the worst years in decades.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's good for investors. Keep an eye on, big price, right? Big drug innovation. And that's it can have a very significant 2022. So that's what I'm looking at. And you know, we talked about Tricida. I mentioned a few, also quite a few I have, and I'm starting accumulating from now to the end of the year. I do not know whether tax loss selling will create better opportunity or not. I don't, but I start to accumulate a position here.
Yeah, you mentioned Tricida on this show a couple of weeks ago, and a very interesting company. They are going forward with their trials, I believe. They're, you know, a drug for kidney.
Oh, actually, going better than expected if you listen to their conference. Because their drug is for those chronic kidney disease, dialysis, so the other patients have no way to go. So that's actually, the trial has no interruption. The stock was down 90%. Good for us, right?
Yeah, so, it certainly is. It's down today on Friday as we speak a bit, but Tricida.
Very low volume. If you look at the volume today, volume is so low.
Yeah.
So far, I look at the volume, 60,000.
Yeah, very low.
Down 5%.
Yeah,
so,
very low.
I mean, if you look at the Steve Cohen bought more than 2 million last quarter. See, that takes a lot of effort to buy 2 million shares because so little share up.
Yeah. TCDA is a symbol, trades on the NASDAQ. And, you still like Amyris, too, for the long run?
Oh, yeah, I like Amyris. Amyris got a high hit hard today as well. So all these small biotech, I think maybe some sell-off before the Labor Day weekend or something. So, it's been very hard today.
All right, Chad. Well,
had a very good few weeks. Past 3 weeks, I've been very good, except today. Yeah.
I guess we should just mention that you're going to be at the Metals Investor Forum. It's going to be a virtual event. It was supposed to be in Vancouver, but because of the COVID setbacks here, where it's going to be a virtual event. So how can people hear you and the companies that you're going to be taking there? You've got American Pacific, Kodiak Copper, Guanajuato Silver, Lakewood Exploration, and Firefox Gold are the ones that I see here listed for. Some of those are followed in my newsletter, and one, Firefox Gold, is a sponsor to this radio show. But how can people be sure to listen to that, Chan? They can view it virtually.
Yeah, they can register for free at the Metals Investment Forum, the website, and you can also ask questions during the presentation. So, if you have any question for this management, you can ask right at the presentation. So, it's on the 17th of this month, two weeks from here.
Exactly, 2 weeks. Well, we'll look forward to that, Chan. Thanks again for being with us. We are out of time. We'll want to do it again sometime real soon. Get an update on some of these exciting stories that you cover for your subscribers. It's chenpicks.com, folks, if you want to sign up for Chen's letter. Chen, thank you for being with us again. All right, folks, we do have to go to break now, but don't go away. Frank Holmes will be with me to talk about gold, cryptocurrencies, the airline industry, and a whole lot of other things as much as we have time for with Frank Holmes. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Lion Wine Metals is focused on high-grade gold in Fiji, led by legendary Canadian financier Walter Barakoff. Lion One is permitted for production and drilling for discoveries in one of the most exciting high-grade gold projects in the prolific South Pacific Ring of Fire. Lion One trades on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol LIO and on the OTCQX under the symbol LOMLF. Go to our website at liononemetals.com for more information about Lion One Metals and high-grade gold in Fiji.
Labrador Gold is an exploration company focused on its flagship Kingsway project, located in central Newfoundland Gold District. Labrador Gold's first phase drilling program has successfully identified high-grade gold mineralization, including a 3.6-meter intercept, grading 20.6 grams per ton gold, and 1.85 meters, grading 50.38 gram per ton gold. The company has approximately $35 million in the treasury and is led by a world-class team of CEO Roger Moss and technical advisors Sean Ryan and Quentin Henney.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, Taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me once again Frank Holmes. He's the CEO and Chief Investment Officer of U.S. Global Investors. That's a public company. Trades in on NASDAQ under the symbol GROW. He's also the executive chairman of Hive Blockchain Technologies, and that trades in Toronto under HIVE, I believe, and also on the NASDAQ under HVBT. Thanks for joining me again, Frank.
Jay, it's great to be with you.
It's good to have you here. And, you know, I was prepared to ask you some questions about Social Security and a bunch of sort of common things we talk about on this show, the financial situation, markets, interest rates, all that sort of thing. But then as we were ready to come on, you told me about something I wasn't aware of, and that has to do with Bitcoin and El Salvador, I guess. Would you care to share that with our listeners?
Yeah, El Salvador is a country that said they were going to make Bitcoin legal tender. That is, the currency being converted into a Bitcoin, like the U.S. dollar used to be able to convert into gold. And normally, you know, it would get lots of positive publicity, except for the concern is this narcos in that country. It's not like Paraguay, where they have green energy, and Paraguay has a conservative government as a banking system. So that was the big worry. And it's interesting that today was the big day and Bitcoin rallied over the weekend. It hit $52,000 and just got crushed down by $10,000 and all that positive publicity started off the morning and it just got crushed. And immediately that ecosystem in the crypto world is just the government. The U.S. and the EU, I've written about it, Jay, and I've talked about it, the G7 finance cartel, that as long as they can participate in their MMT, modern monetary theory of printing money collectively, then they don't have to worry about one country going currency affecting another. So all of someone comes El Salvador, and there's just no rational reason for it to break like that. And that crypto space, that ecosystem, is so diversified and global around the world. And I think it's really fascinating that they sound like GATA today.
Yes.
That's what it reminded me of, hearing all the chatter that is government manipulation through the futures market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they created a futures market. I mean, there is a futures market for Bitcoin and I guess other cryptos as well, right? How about Ethereum?
And Ethereum, both of Bitcoin.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So just as the Gold Antitrust Action Committee has been telling us for years, you see these huge smackdowns all of a sudden in a matter of 10, 20 minutes. You know, $100 comes off the price of gold with massive paper contracts. Nothing real changing hands, just the futures markets, massive selling, and of course by central banks in the case of gold, according to GATA, and they have unlimited resources. They can create money out of thin air. The banking system can, and just smash the market. So is that kind of what you think might have happened today?
Well, that's what the crypto eco people say. You know, and hearing the chatter, and I think the big difference. You know, I'm trying to help with the gold investor. Here's the similarities between that crypto ecosystem and gold is that gold historically has been the most decentralized private property, portable private property in the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's very important. It's portable. It's private property. It's like non-bearer bonds. We used to have them. Even your car, I mentioned, you can't drive your car without getting your updated license every year and your sticker for your car. So it's really
right.
Property. But gold is. You can take your bracelet off, your 24-karat gold jewelry, in many places around the world and get yourself out of a bad country or get yourself medical care.
Mm-hmm.
So digital money, Bitcoin comes along, and Bitcoin is that same sort of thing. It's decentralized, and you can move it around. You can go from one country to the next easily or between two parties. And governments don't like that. They want to have everything centralized of which they can control. So you can see that most of the more left politicians, the more left they are more anti both gold and Bitcoin.
Right.
So they share some commonality here. And the big difference that I see is that gold investors like myself or yourself, we're there about preservation of our wealth from government printing of so much money and devaluing the currency over time. The crypto space is all about getting rich and being faster than the government's going to destroy your money.
Mm-hmm.
So one is motivated by sort of fear and is a fear trade, and the other one is a greed trade. And that's the big difference I see with young millennials. And we see that in our ETFs, like we talked about in your program before about JETS. It really got discovered by the millennials.
Yes.
And GoAU, it was the millennials that bought it because it's a quant gold product. They like the idea of the quant approach. And that's the big difference. One is to get rich, be faster than what the government is doing, and the other one is saying, I can't stop what the government's doing, but I can preserve my wealth by having some gold exposure and rebalancing every year.
Right. Well, is it fair to say, Frank, that gold you can put in your pocket, you can't do that so easily with Bitcoin or Ethereum?
Well, yeah, that's true. But what you can do is you can put it in your pocket with a little chip. You know, you can.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I think the nicest part is you can't wear it.
Mm-hmm.
And 60% of all gold demand globally is for love.
Yes.
Trade is still so critical. Mm-hmm. Whereas Bitcoin, you need electricity. You don't need electricity to be able to port your move your gold around, but you need electricity to move your Bitcoin around.
Mm-hmm. I noticed in your letter you quoted John Paulson with regard to Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies in general, perhaps it was. He said eventually that cryptocurrencies will eventually prove to be worthless, end of quote. What do you think? I mean, you're involved, and I want to ask you about Hive. Because it was a profitable company last year, at least. I don't know how it's doing this year. Maybe you can comment on that. But how do you answer John Paulson then?
Well, this is old school of thought, and I like to give the example of diamonds. In 1947, after World War II was finished, all the soldiers are coming back, and Eisenhower came up with the big plan to rebuild Europe. At the same time, interstate highways across America, mapping out 25,000 miles. That put all of the men back to work. And also that gave big disposable income. And then all these young men wanted to get married. And out of nowhere, De Beers contacts, they form a cartel. They control the supply of diamonds. There's a big discovery in South Africa. They get to control that. And then they go and hire heirs in New York and Madison Avenue to go and create a program of a new form of trust.
Uh-huh.
And that's what gold is about. Gold is about trust. And that you value and you trust it. So all of a sudden, this intangible thing called love gets validated by a diamond.
Mm-hmm.
It's something intangible is validated by something tangible. Mm-hmm. Diamonds go from $10 to $100 to $1,000 to $10,000 a carat. And then De Beers did it again in 1965 in Japan. And if you look at the data points, only 2% of Americans were using diamonds to get engaged with, and now it's 80%. And the same thing is with Japan. It was a very small component, less than 5%, and now it's 75% of Japanese women expect to get a diamond ring if this guy's wants to engage with them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can trust that, this piece of rock, 4 tetrahedral-shaped carbon, then mm-hmm. why can't you trust Bitcoin? It was decentralized.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you get enough people to believe it, and there's capped at 21 million coins, that's like capping gold at 21 million ounces, and enough people trust it, it goes to gigaland in prices.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Metcalfe's law suggests, and that's what's been occurring. But it's going to be very volatile on that path. So I think the operative word, like, do you trust government policies that they will enhance the value of the dollar over time? They will devalue the dollar.
Of course, yes.
And so once you believe that, then what's your protection from that? And one is being an early investor in great new ideas, a disruptive technology, or making sure you have exposure to the world of gold.
Mm-hmm.
And now comes along Bitcoin mining and Ethereum mining. And what the advantage we have right now is that when we go raise money and spend it, we can get immediate cash flow and revenue. It takes a lot longer with all the regulations against gold mining. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just unbelievable over the past 30 years to see how difficult it is to explore, to process and move a brick of gold.
Yeah, it just seems to me, though, that whereas you talk about the diamonds and also about Bitcoin, it seems to me more artificial in a way, though, than gold and silver, too, to a lesser extent. Those over thousands of years, the marketplace, I think, determined that those items were transferable means of wealth. It just seems to me, maybe I'm the old school, along with Paulson and some other people we know, but the idea that somehow you've manufactured this demand rather than it, just occurring organically.
I wrote an article a couple of weeks ago called The Metaverse.
Mm-hmm.
Zuckerberg used the word many times. There's a book written in 92, and where they first talked about crypto money and the idea of living in the metaverse. It's like the Matrix. You take the red pill or the blue pill. Do you want to see reality or you don't want to see reality? And that metaverse is part of that digital money experience. And you have to embrace it because you and I are going to pass our wealth on to our children.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a complete different view of the world. So I don't think my boys were, I don't know if your son was, but big in gaming. But gaming is now an NCAA sport. So
I guess it's that old proverbial issue of when you get old, it's hard to change. And I'm 74, Frank, and I have a little difficulty with some of these concepts. But I do acknowledge that we do have to change, and things are changing and changing very rapidly, it seems to me. Concepts of what money is. I mean, this metaverse thing just seems so wacky to me, but I know it's coming.
We're in it now. Digital money is all part of that.
Yeah.
And what is surreal and real? And I think it's all, fascinating. The magic is to try to be ahead of it. So I've always advocated this 10% weighting minimum in gold or rebalance once a year. And if you want to play the volatility, you could do once a quarter. And then at least 2% into Bitcoin, Ethereum, and the safest, cleanest ways to use Hive as a proxy. And I thought that because we're much more volatile, you wouldn't want to have a diversified portfolio with the DNA of volatility of crypto. But
yeah.
For time, it makes higher highs. And there is a big push for digital money because the government wants it. What we all have to recognize is history. When you talk about old guys like you and I, well, the Medicis were involved in the creation of double entry accounting.
Mm-hmm.
And this is profound, along with the Doge at in Venice.
Mm-hmm.
It allowed for the creation of banking. And that allowed for the demographics of a middle class. So if you look back, the middle class, the haves versus the have-nots, and the haves never want to share anything with the have-nots. They want them all to live in serfdom, like slaves.
Yeah.
But along comes the banking that starts funding a middle class, and they start creating businesses, and it grows. Well, what we're dealing with now is blockchain is triple entry accounting.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a big game changer. That is this whole debate in Georgia over the elections and voting. If it was put on the blockchain, it's perfect because you would be able to know who voted, where they voted, when they voted, but you wouldn't be able to, any of the public could see all of that, but no one could see that was your name, Jay.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's kept confidential.
Mm-hmm.
So from a voting point of view, blockchain is phenomenal. And from because of this concept of triple entry accounting, because you have something that is time stamped and is transparent, except for your private property rights, you the person.
Right.
And And so I think that this is how things are evolving. And a lot of these young kids, they buy into gold, the concept of it. And I think that they believe that like gaming, they're going to be able to make more money faster if they're playing in the front end of this change rather than the back end.
And so governments, so you see a movement, an inevitable movement towards cryptocurrencies as with governments having control of them, Frank?
The government, there's no doubt the government is trying to slow it down so they could come out with their own. Take a look at J.P. Morgan. J.P. Morgan knocked crypto religiously in 2017 and 2018. They stopped in February 2019 when they launched their own cryptocurrency called a stablecoin. Stopped it. Facebook was knocking. They wouldn't let you advertise on it. Anything with crypto couldn't talk about it. And so they came up with their own coin called Libra. Well, if you want to see a case study of government intervention, take a look at Facebook's Libra coin. As soon as they announced that, Bitcoin jumped from 6,000 to 14,000. And then the G20 and the Bank of International Settlements did just an incredible pile-on that they beat up Zuckerberg, and now they changed the name from Libra to Diem, D-I-E-M. And they don't want that guy to have an independent cryptocurrency, Facebook to be this sort of decentralized mechanism. So the governments are scared because they're trying to come up with their own, and they're just slow at getting the technology. The most advanced, it appears, is China. And China doesn't want a Bitcoin either, so they threw all the Bitcoin miners out of their country, but because they're coming up with their own digital currency, and they want to support it with gold, so they've been the biggest buyers of gold. And so digital money allows governments to actually tax better. They can tax every tip, every transaction. Yeah. A couple of years ago, we had one of our analysts in China, and he couldn't get toothpaste or toothbrush with a credit card or cash. He had to have WeChat, iPay on your telephone to pay. But no one would accept cash or credit cards. They're old school.
So, is that widespread in China now?
Yeah, widespread. So China skipped telephone lines and went right to mobile telephones. So China skipped a lot of old construction and basically came out with new speed rails, the most advanced technology, and having a speed rail. So I think that this is the same thing here, and the other countries like the U.S. and Canada and the British, they all want to be able to have digital money of some form.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess the question then is, how does one play it? You know, you're suggesting that Hive, and as I look at Hive, the share price hasn't been all that volatile as compared to, say, BTG, whatever that that ETF is that you can buy Bitcoin with. It hasn't been all that volatile, has it, Frank? I mean, and no, you've made money. It's been a profitable company.
It's extremely volatile. The daily volatility is 7%. Tesla is 6. Bitcoin is 5. Gold and the stock market's 1.
Hive is very volatile.
Very volatile. But the nice part is that our revenue has been growing. We keep putting reports out. And we keep buying more equipment. I think our total inventory before the correction today was worth $130 million of cash and cryptocurrencies. And we're mining. Our run rate is over 600,000 a day. No, we're doing about $300 million a year now, run rate. You know how long that would take to do that in a gold stock?
Yeah.
Scratch. You know, yeah. It's really hard to fathom it, but it is throwing off tremendous amounts of revenue. And the other big part is that what we think is, you know, this idea of digital everything. These data centers, we're buying our own, building them. Our GPU chips from NVIDIA are very valuable, not just mining Ethereum, but for all quant trading, all AI research for cancer, any other data controls where they're trying to monitor for smart cities or traffic or people buying beer or a Twitter account, all uses AI. They all need those GPU chips to try to figure things out. So we feel at Hive we have a unique position for long-term growth.
Frank, with just a few minutes left here, I see 3 minutes, my engineer is telling me. I believe that Hive made a profit of $28.5 million or something like that last year. Is that right?
Yeah, we're waiting to get our financials filed the next 10 days. And it's pretty public. You know, you can calculate how much you're going to make almost to the T. And we'll have a banner year. The end of March should be banner. And so I'm very tickled by, you know, we'll shock the street, try to tell people, but it's public. Anyone that has a good analytical model, you can download every day our hashing power, and you can calculate, you know, with a 10% confirmation what our revenue and cash flow is going to be. Yeah. So I'm very thrilled by it. I'm thrilled what we've been doing with it. I just came back from a week being in the Arctic, up in northern Sweden, 100 miles from the North Pole. I'm very, very excited about what we're doing with it.
Is that where you're mining up there?
Yeah, we're mining Ethereum.
Uh-huh. All the way up there.
All the way up there because it's cold air. It's always cold air. And it's only green. So one of the things that Hive did from day one is to have an ESG strategy and only mine green and clean coins. Where most of these other companies now, they run out and buy carbon tax credits to offset their carbon footprint. Not us. We're free from that. And that can cost you an extra $5,000 to $7,000 a coin. So I'm happy where we are positioned.
Frank, this is really interesting. And I think I'd like to invite you back sometime just to talk about Hive and educate our listeners a little bit more about it. You know, we're gold bugs primarily. But, you know, I think this is a very necessary topic and one we should all know more about. If you're willing to come on, I'd love to have you back sometime just to focus on that.
Ask your son. Your son's a very bright guy, you know, a young man, and he's going to know about that space. So I had to learn through my son, Jay.
That's true.
We have friends that have a network that's very different than their network.
Yeah, well, that's true. That is absolutely true. They live in a different world than I do, that's for sure. Frank, it's so good to have you back, and we could have talked about the normal things, sort of the boring things about Social Security and debt and, you know, all this stuff, but this is really interesting, and I'm really thankful that you could be with us today, so thank you very much, and we'll look to do it again, and hopefully about Hive. Thank you so much. Frank. Well, folks, that is it for this week. Next week, Michael Oliver is back, along with Dr. Quentin Henning. He'll be here to talk about SK Mining. They're onto a VMS deposit that looks very much like SK Creek, the SK Creek mine, the famous mine. Also, Tabe Costa and Kevin Smith of Crescat Capital will be with me for the first time. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
NV Gold Corporation, trading under NVX on the TSX and NVGLF on the OTCQB, is a gold exploration company focused on uncovering the next multi-million ounce gold deposit in Nevada with an aggressive exploration season ahead in 2021, a tight share structure, strong management ownership, key strategic investors, a globally recognized technical team, report coverage from industry gold experts, and a strong treasury. Visit NVGoldCorp.com to learn more on this exciting story.